Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Steelers Week Part 2 coming up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. The Bengals take on the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Steel City, and boy, do they need this one. That is for sure. There is the Bengals seek their first division win of the year, which sounds weird to say with three games already in the books. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. I'm Anthony Cosenza. He's John Sheeran, and we are coming at you live. If you like watching the live show, at a little bit different day and time, the schedule's got a little wacky, but we also, John, first of all, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. We're kind of getting the folks sort of slightly accustomed to maybe a new schedule we have coming up.
Yeah. So ideally we want to kind of split the show up into two separate episodes, more manageable episodes per week, starting with maybe a Monday show and then like a midweek show. Originally, we were thinking about doing Monday and Thursday, and I told Anthony, yeah, it would be a great time to start that next week after the Steelers game, and then I forgot that Thanksgiving is that Thursday, so we might adjust accordingly there, but we're going to try to give you guys two main shows per week into a more condensed format. We'll do like some sort of a general recap of the previous game on the early week show, and then we'll do more of a game preview towards later week of the show, but just to give you guys more digestible content going forward.
Yeah, I think the game plan, I've talked about it a couple times on some recent episodes too, but I think the game plan is we're going to stick with doing our post-game kind of immediate reactions show, whether it's just me or if John wants to come on to that as well, we'll talk about some things. But then we'll get into what we usually do on Wednesday nights. We're going to do a little bit of that, plus some of the headlines that we do as a headline show. So we'll kind of blend those two together, and then we'll kind of do the latter half, opinions, analysis, that sort of thing. If we do on our show, we'll do that later in the week. And then of course, if and when we have someone to help us preview things, from the other side of the fence, we'll have a standalone episode with that, unless they want to come on the main show, that sort of thing. So we're still going to be bringing you a lot of different episodes. We're just going to be breaking it up a little bit and giving you stuff, staggering it a little bit more throughout the week. We're still going to be doing listener questions live a couple times a month. We're still going to be doing all that kind of stuff, but breaking up our big show a little bit and blending it a little bit with the headline show. We hope that it'll be enjoyable and palatable for everybody.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's been great seeing like a lot of different shows about the Bengals pop up in recent years, especially just in the past year. And just a lot of different content and options for everyone. And this is kind of our way to say, hey, you know, we're keeping up with the times. You know, we're gonna try to give the people what they want, and maybe a little bit more of a better way. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know if more of us is actually what you want, but you're going to get it. So, I mean, that's, if you like what we do, then awesome. You're going to get a lot of stuff. But at any rate, again, this is the Orange and Black Insider, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast Network, along with Coach Speak and Chalk Talk from Matt Minnick and Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends. All part of the podcast network. You can get that on the audio side on your favorite audio streamer, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Leave us a review on those if you can. That helps us out and helps the show out, so we would appreciate that. And we all have our own individual YouTube channels. Ours can be found right by that SB Nation link under John's side of the screen there. You can click that down below and subscribe. I got to get like a fancy subscribe infographic or something, well, but I don't know. Let's not get crazy. And then you can click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. And like I said, and like John said, there's going to be a lot of content coming up here, continued content throughout the year. Okay, so let's start with a little bit. I went through headlines earlier this week, so we're kind of caught up on some things. But again, as the week charges on, guys are getting healthier. Some other things have popped up. I guess where we kind of want to start is injury report and or some of the guys who have come back, namely on the Bengals side of the fence there, and who's been practicing and who we might expect to see this week. John, I know you've been doing a lot of that stuff for CincyJungle.com.
Right. So, I mean, think back to before the bye week, you had plenty of injuries on the defensive side of the ball, including DJ Reader, Mike Hilton, Trey Flowers, among several other people. Obviously, Chidobe Awuzie, who I believe had successful ACL reconstruction surgery, I think either today or yesterday as we're recording this. And in the first injury report between the Bengals and Steelers on Wednesday, you had Chris Evans, who also got injured against the Panthers right before the bye week. He was limited in practice. Trey Flowers was limited with that hamstring. Mike Hilton returned to practice in full capacity after, I think, having minor surgery on his pinky finger. And DJ Reader, who is not technically a part of the 53-man roster right now, he did practice Wednesday. They didn't have to include him in the injury report because he's not on the active roster just yet. But because he's practicing, he's not limited. He's just working with that knee brace right now. All signs point to him being activated onto the roster towards the end of this week and then making his return against the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, Anthony, you have a defense that, looking back to week one when they played the Steelers, has 10 of those 11 starters on the field at the same time. Unfortunately, Awuzie being that lone starter who's not going to play, but you're inserting your second-round rookie in Cam Taylor-Britt, who has now 3 weeks of game experience under his belt going up against a rookie quarterback. So the defense definitely looking on the upswing.
It is looking on the upswing. The one thing, again, though, Josh Tupo is potentially going to, well, he is going to, it sounds like he's going to miss this one based on his calf injury that he suffered earlier in the year. So he continues to kind of be a week-to-week guy for them to it. But so the depth is tested a little bit. Thankfully, you know, Jay Tufele and Zachary Carter have shown some nice moments in their time, you know, kind of filling in there. So, yeah, I mean, it's good to see the Bengals kind of coming back, getting back healthier, particularly with Reader. Indications are, I know Zach Taylor said, I think as of earlier on Thursday via Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com, that he's pretty confident that he's going to play, meaning DJ Reader is going to play this week. So that is good. Hilton, as you mentioned as well, all well and good on that front. But John, also not really, I guess he is noted on the injury report, but not really seeming to be available this week. And you just tweeted out a recent tweet from him. Jamar Chase, wide receiver, still coming back from that hip injury, not seeming like he is going to be ready to go this week against the Steelers. And we'll talk more about key players and all that kind of stuff a little later. But this is still a big, big loss for the Bengals to try and fill.
I don't know, man. I mean, we can play Twitter detective a little bit. Yesterday, there was a report from, I believe, Jeremy Fowler, who's pretty connected within the Bengals organization. He's an ESPN NFL insider. He was reporting that the Bengals are looking towards next week, week 12 against mm-hmm. the Titans, as that mm-hmm. potential return for Jamar Chase. And hypothetically, if he practices next Wednesday, the first practice of the week, that would be exactly 4 weeks since the Bengals essentially shut him down, didn't put him on injury reserve, but told him, like, stay off that hip. Walk around with crutches, make sure they're not putting any stress or weight on that so it heals properly. So that would have completed this proposed 4 week time span where they felt like he would heal fully before, like, the, you know, without having to put him on injured reserve and, you know, taking up a spot on that and not having to use an activation that they only have a handful left for the remainder of the season. So that would put him at 4 weeks. Then today you have, I guess, Chase opening or revealing some white and black Nike cleats that he was given in the locker room today. And then he has this cryptic tweet, which equates to all, oh God, I already forgot what it was. Oh no, it was an
abbreviation. It does involve God.
Hold on. Oh man, I'm not gonna know what it is now. But essentially, it means here we go. All praises to the Most High, which is it was the 6 or 7 letter acronym, and starting to piece together. Like I don't know, he's getting these cleats. He's indicating that there's some good news here. I'm not saying he's gonna play this week, but I don't know if this is some gamesmanship. Exactly. I don't know if this is some gamesmanship because the Steelers are doing so with Micah Fitzpatrick, who was out last week with appendicitis, but now there's reports that he might play, which doesn't seem to make any sense considering what we just saw with Joe Burrow with appendicitis and then appendectomy. I don't know. I'm not saying Ja'Marr Chase is going to play, but it does seem like for sure week 12 next week against the Titans is that definite return.
And I think you had mentioned it either, you might have re-mentioned it right now, but I think you mentioned it in one of your articles that friend of the show, James Rapine, had reported that he was not on crutches as of recently. So that's a good sign. And I guess in a way I was, just because of the Fowler report and all that kind of stuff, I was kind of like, well, that's just how it's going to be. He's not going to be playing this week, but I guess in a way I see what you're saying, where this thing kind of snuck up on everybody and was sudden in terms of him being gone. So I guess there's a potential of, okay, well, I guess it could sneak up at the end of the week here, and maybe he could play based on some of these things you're pointing out and be just as sneaky or just as sudden that way. I don't know. That's an interesting point of view, I guess.
At the very least, I think he is, if not ready to practice, like on the precipice of being able to practice, which is a monumental step in this process. Like, even if we are under the guise that Ja'Marr Chase is quote unquote built different and his hip can heal faster than others in his position, it's still a hip injury, and it's still, there's a lot of variables with that recovery timeline, but it seems like he has taken the steps to get himself back on the field as soon as possible. And if he starts practicing at least in the bare minimum fashion this week, I think it's a major win for them.
Yeah. So looking at the Steelers side of things, some really intriguing stories coming really this week from a lot of these players on the Steelers side. Of course, you could start with Minkah Fitzpatrick, the guy who had a pick six against Joe Burrow in week one, who had been coming back from his own appendectomy, now went under an appendectomy of his own, and may or may not play. Was looking like, no, he's not going to play. Now you're kind of wondering, you're hearing some things on the Steelers side of the fence that he might be available there after all. Who knows how he's going to be at that point if he is available. But interesting, and a twist of irony in terms of just a rare issue, a somewhat rare issue happening to kind of two counterparts that go up against each other and would potentially be going up against each other this week as well.
Yeah, bad appendixes are just spreading throughout the division, I guess.
It's weird. You like never hear about this, and all of a sudden it's like, what?
The Browns and or Ravens are next on the docket, so watch out for those guys.
Yeah. And then, of course, another story, TJ Watt, injured himself in the first Bengals game, kind of partially tore that pectoral, came back, was playing last week, was part of a really good run defense. A little bit of a teaser. I spoke with Jeff Hartman. We did our 5 questions with the enemy series that we did. It's going to be posted, I believe, tomorrow on Cincy Jungle. But basically, I kind of asked him pitch count, snap count for TJ Watt in this game, who will play. You can see here he went full practice with that. And Jeff Hartman of Behind the Steel Curtain, SB Nation Steelers site, says that that's probably not going to be the case this week in terms of they're going to let him go. They're going to let him play basically full bore is kind of what the prevailing opinion is with Watt this week. Now, I mean, he'll get spelled obviously, and there's going to be spots where he's not in there, but they know what he is in. And Hartman kind of talked about this a little bit. They know what he has done against the Bengals. They are well aware what he has done against the Cincinnati Bengals, whether it's against Lael Collins, Bobby Hart, or whomever else. And so they want him to take as many snaps as possible this week.
As they should. It was last week where he officially returned against the Saints, and the Saints have run into issues this year, but Ryan Ramczyk is still usually one of the better right tackles in the league, and TJ Watt in this first game back kind of got the better of him a lot during that game. So I know we make a big deal about especially like this year for the Bengals and their tackles and how they're not performing up to standard against some of these better edge rushers. But TJ Watt really is that guy that it doesn't matter if you have Willie Anderson or Bobby Hart up against him. Like, he's going to get his, and he's going to get his production. And even if TJ Watt isn't 100%, which he probably is at this point, he's had a lot of time to rest and recover. A lot of times in that first game against Collins, it wasn't Watt necessarily, you know, being aggressive as a pass rusher, getting the best of them. It was two pass defense and one interception that he got just from reading Joe Burrow's eyes. And that was something that Joe Burrow mentioned in his weekly press conference this week. Like, Watt is maybe the only guy that you have to especially watch out for and not give away when you're going to throw the ball, or where your eyes are dictating on those short passes, because Watt will read your eyes and time his jumps, and it's up to Lael to get it in his face and punish the jumpers. This is what offensive line Twitter says all the time. Whenever defensive linemen are leaving their feet to try to bat the ball down, get in their chest and just knock them to the ground. Make a statement to know that this is not okay. And I think that should be in the back of Lael's mind every single time that Bengals drop back to pass.
Yeah, important point to know too. I mean, you know, we're talking about Burrow coming back from the appendectomy. How close to 100% was he in that game? Obviously, the four interceptions, that sort of thing. You know, that was Lael Collins' first game at right tackle, going up against TJ Watt, and he hadn't played basically at all in training camp, etc. So you have to figure there's going to be a vast improvement here. And I have to give myself the oh so rare pat on the back, because I remember in that post game show, I talked about when Watt had that interception, I said he didn't even rush the pass. He stayed still and read the entire play. And this was, I think, not only instinctual football, but film study, right? He just saw what he knew, and he, instead of kind of just going full-born rushing the passer, he stayed put, timed his jump right, and made the play. And Burrow talked about that this week. So, again, Watt coming back here, and then just kind of a quick, before we transition a little bit, another quick story on here. You see Larry Ogunjobi on there. Zach Taylor, in a press conference this week, talked about how they were interested in bringing back Larry Ogunjobi, and they wanted him to come back if it made sense to the team and made sense to him. Obviously, the figures and all that kind of stuff, the concerns about his ankle from the postseason injury that he had against the Raiders, all kind of contributed to some uncertainty there. And he ended up, of course, instead of going to the Jets, instead of going to the Bears, instead of going anywhere else, he goes to the Steelers. And, you know, the Bengals' loss is their gain there. But another player that's showing up on the injury report where there's been some interesting storylines this particular week.
Yeah, how about those hip injuries, man? It's not just the Bengals dealing with them. So Ogunjobi, it wasn't shown on the injury report that we posted in Cincy Jungle, but Ogunjobi did not practice on Wednesday with that hip injury. So we will probably get Thursday's injury report while we're recording this, just to see if there's any update there. And if not, he might not play in this game. But yeah, it did sound like there was communication throughout the offseason to see if that reunion was possible. It didn't seem like, I don't know, if he injured his ankle in the last play that he played in the postseason, and he still was essentially given $26 million guaranteed from the Bears had he passed that physical, it didn't really seem like the Bengals were going to be the favorites to bring him back, as opposed to just bringing back BJ Hill for a more team-friendly deal. But once that deal kind of fell through, it did kind of open the door back up to see if there was a role for him and if he wanted to accept that role. But he ended up taking a chance in a contract that allowed him to play more and be more of a featured starter in this case. So, yeah, it just happened to be the Steelers of all teams.
And then we'll probably use this as a transition into our next segment here. But another player that I don't want to say we forgot about him, but with all the other players coming back and going out with injury and all these sort of things, there's been sort of a forgotten man in all of this, and that is Brandon Wilson. And I guess it has been partially because it's been so long since he's played for the team, right? I mean, it's been about a year and a half. Injured his knee early last year, and then he's been out, you know, the entire he was on the PUP list and all that kind of stuff this year. So he's been out. And now, John, we talked about it before we took the air, that he is back and kind of taking some practice snaps as well as a kick returner.
Right. It was DJ Reader who got all the buzz of him being activated off of IR, or at least able to practice. But Brandon Wilson, at the same time, was clear to practice as well. He's been on the PUP list ever since, I believe, the middle of the preseason or training camp. He didn't work with the team at all during the offseason because he was still recovering from the torn ACL, which I believe happened exactly 54 weeks ago now. It's like 2 weeks after being the one-year anniversary of that injury. And the construction of the team, the fact that they had so many safeties and just players in the secondary in general, allowed him to just take all the time that he needed to fully recover. Oftentimes, see guys return, you know, within that 12-month time span of an ACL, but this allowed him to just take all the time he needed to fully recover. And now that the Bengals have some depth issues in the secondary, specifically at safety, Dax Hill is probably still week to week with that shoulder injury. He wasn't practicing yesterday, so he's probably not going to be active this week. And that might not be the case for Brandon Wilson either. I believe Zach Taylor said he doesn't imagine him playing this week, but him practicing and taking reps as the kickoff returner. I think that's an interesting development to watch going forward. If they need that fourth safety in the coming weeks with Dax Hill out, and they may need potentially a boost at kick returner because Chris Evans has not necessarily been getting it done, it's a way for Brandon Wilson to get back onto the field with a role.
So we'll talk more about special teams, should not, in just a minute. But I want to ask you a question because I talked about this briefly on the headline show earlier this week. I answered a question that was asked in one of the live chats here. And that, John, was that someone had asked why the Bengals didn't get more defensive back help, namely at corner, in the wake of the Awuzie injury. And so now you have this information that Brandon Wilson is coming back. Now, Brandon Wilson is a safety by trade. He's very athletic. He's not a corner. So you got to believe, number one, that the Bengals have faith and are, kind of seeing what they've got early on in Cam Taylor-Britt with the unexpected departure of Awuzie here. But I kind of said, you know, it may be that they have some sort of defensive plan in mind with Wilson getting out there in certain packages, and they think that he can contribute. Again, I know he's coming back from the injury, and they may want to ease him into it, but that may be part of the equation as to why the Bengals weren't uber aggressive in outside free agency to remedy the loss of Awuzie. Again, I know he's a safety, he's not a corner, but maybe there's a little method to that madness. I don't know if I'm grasping at straws with that reasoning, though.
Yeah, I think it would have made sense if they had weeks like the Panthers week kind of translate over to like weeks like this week and next week. Like if it became a multi-week problem where they were without both Mike Hilton, Trey Flowers, and Chidobe Awuzie, like they would have definitely needed some exterior help. I think they like the fact that they can elevate Alan George off the practice squad a couple more times, and he may have to fill in a few more times if they need like an extra cornerback just to be able to play if needed to. Like that was the case for him against the Panthers. He was cornerback 5 and he ended up playing 20 snaps just because they just emptied out the bench in that blowout win. But there may be a case where Alan George might be cornerback 4 in some weeks if further injuries do continue. But now that they have 5 healthy cornerbacks who've been on the team since week 1, and Apple, Hilton, Taylor-Britt, Flowers, and Jalen Davis, I think they felt comfortable enough to not look to the outside, because then that's bringing in a cornerback that hasn't been with the system for the entire year, and you had to catch him up to speed. Who knows what his role would have necessarily been. It's always nice to have extra bodies, but they do have a guy in George, who I think they're comfortable playing in the pinch. But we'll have to see what happens with Hill, how much time he misses, and when Wilson does come back. You know, he wasn't really featured that much as a defensive back in these past couple of years, especially since this defense kind of, you know, turned over a new leaf with new personnel and stuff. So I'm interested to see if these openings in playing time give him an actual chance to be a contributor on defense again.
One more storyline before we get to some special teams talk. And yes, special teams are players too. The element of revenge this week, John, is kind of going to be a little bit lessened. And one person that we did not show on that injury report, I don't believe, was the fact that the Pittsburgh Steelers made a move and brought in William Jackson, former Bengals defensive back, and went to Washington and then, you know, moved over to Pittsburgh here. And, when they interviewed him, one of the first interviews in him coming over to Pittsburgh, they'd asked him about a back issue that had been bugging him since mid-October. He said, it's feeling pretty good. You know, I'm kind of ready to go. I got to keep doing some things to heal it up. Well, lo and behold, the Bengals will not get revenge on a guy who kind of said some unkind things about the team on his way out of the door there. And he doesn't get the opportunity to have some revenge against the Bengals as well, John, because he was placed on IR, short-term IR, with that back issue.
Yeah, it wasn't just the team either. It was, I think the fans got thrown under the bus too, which, you know, if he was the subject of a bunch of cruelty from fans, like, I can understand how that kind of lived under his skin. But, you know, he definitely burned a bridge here in Cincinnati, which is why I think when it was rumored that he was on the trading block, Bengals needed a cornerback, I think someone threw that out there and someone in the know.
It was never happening, yeah.
Immediately. And there's also a connection with the Steelers and William Jackson because the Bengals picked William Jackson in the first round of the 2016 draft right before the Steelers. The Steelers ended up taking Artie Burns out of Miami. Artie Burns ended up playing up to his name and got burnt a lot at cornerback. And there was a lot of talk that William Jackson was the target for the Steelers, but the Steelers normally don't trade up in the first round, so they didn't really get that chance. So this was their chance to pick up a guy that they liked a lot 6-7 years ago. But unfortunately for William Jackson, he's just not that player that he was coming out of Houston anymore.
He's not. And, you know, what would have been the ultimate is if William Jackson was to play, if this game was in Cincinnati, let's just say, and William Jackson was playing, and that was the same week that Adam Jones was the ruler of the jungle, because Adam Jones is all over William Jackson on social media, all over him. So that would have been a funny one. But anyway, Bengals will not see William Jackson in the rematch here.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
And let's get to our, I don't know, I guess we could call it a state your case, and it's going to revolve around special teams. I guess it's a little good idea, bad idea here, John, and that is the fact that there are, now that Brandon Wilson's back, we talked about him coming back to practice and all, you know, getting some reps at kick returner and whatnot. You got Chris Evans with the knee injury. He left the Panthers game prematurely in that one because of it. And there's also talk now about Drew Chrisman potentially stepping in for Kevin Huber, because Kevin Huber on the punting side of things has not done all that well this year. I know it was kind of like a little bit of a, I don't know if you want to call it a 1-year experiment with someone that has that much experience in Huber, but it was kind of like, is he going to be the punter? Is he not? Well, now midway through the season, there's more and more questions about, you know, what should the Bengals do here? I guess the question I want to pose to you, good idea or bad idea that the Bengals potentially make one or both of these wholesale transitions at both of these spots, kick returner and punter, this late into the season or at this point with those two players, you know, veterans being involved, et cetera. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's not as simple as to say it is a good or bad idea. I think there's a lot of nuance that's involved in the here, but Kevin Huber has made it really hard, I think, for me and anyone else to say that it is a bad idea to replace him with Drew Chrisman, just because it's been consistently bad for Huber out of the gate for these past several games. Like, he's had at least one bad punt in the last handful of games that he's been out there, and it's not just isolated incidents either. He's at the bottom of the league in terms of net average punt yards per punt. He's in the bottom of the league of yards per punt return allowed. Just overall hang time has not been what it has been. It hasn't been what it was in the preseason, which is one of the main reasons why he beat out Chrisman in the first place. It's not just been these isolated incidences. It's been nine games of subpar performance from a guy that you expected a lot more, and a guy who apparently is practicing well. And I think the fact that he did get now a week's rest to reset and hopefully iron things out, maybe that is what will help him go forward. But Anthony, it's such a mystery to me. Like, every day it seems like there's a new report about who's punting first in practice and who's got the inside edge. Like, we don't know, just as much as we didn't know who was going to win this competition during August in the preseason and training camp. And then that battle ended up going up to the last day, and it was just Darren Simmons going with his gut. So now, like, I don't think his gut is necessarily the best for the situation, because we have nine games of Kevin Huber tape to show why Drew Christensen's probably the better option here. But the reason why I would hesitate is because of, you have a rookie long snapper in there who's established chemistry with Huber as the holder, and he's done a fine job. There hasn't been any notable, you know, flaws with Cal Adamidis in his new role now, but you add in another holder and Drew Christman into the equation, and who knows how that changes things with the field goals battery. So there's a lot of different variables here, and I would like to think that whatever they go with now at the bye week, they kind of stick to, and unless Kevin Huber just gives them absolutely no choice but to revoke his duties, they should probably just stick with it.
So Kevin Huber, when you look at the numbers, he is 31st in the league in net yards per punt, 37.4. He is 30th in the league in average yards per punt with 43.2. He is 28th in the league in terms of balls placed inside the 20-yard line with, I believe, 9 on the year. Those are three pretty damning statistical categories there that kind of go, oh boy, I don't know. And then you mentioned also the you know, the return yards and that sort of aspect. That's been kind of upticked as well because of the you know, the lack of hang time and that sort of thing. So you know, there are a lot of things to point to with Kevin Huber, who I believe he's in the top 10, top 12 in terms of return yards this year. Now the Bengals haven't let up a punt return touchdown or anything, but you know, there's a lot of things here on the punting side that I would say, and I'm starting with Huber, and I guess we can move to Wilson in just a second, but I guess there's, you know, there are a lot of statistical areas where I go, yeah, this is necessitating some sort of change. The one area, John, that gives me pause, the one area is the fact that he is the holder on kicks, and the Bengals have already lost a long snapper this so far this year, and making that change when you, I always call it kind of the battery, to use a baseball term, between pitcher, catcher, that sort of thing. When you have a field goal kicker, a holder, and a long snapper, and you're talking about in the course of a half of a season, you are talking about replacing two of those three. I don't know how comfortable I am with that. And so I guess that the question for Darren Simmons has to be, what do you weigh more? You know, is the punting, those low punting statistics, are you willing to take that because of the safety you have with him as a holder, or do you just sacrifice it all and just say, hey, we're losing the field position battle here, and holding kind of be damned, we gotta make a change.
Exactly. And the Bengals, I think, are 28th in special teams DVOA after being top 10 in every year for the past 4 or 5 years. This is Darren Simmons, is like, this is his unit. They are not typically bad. Even when they were the worst team in the NFL, they had the best special teams in the NFL in terms of DVOA in 2019. They're not good, and it mainly revolves around the punting game. And I know Stanley Morgan has missed a couple of games, and they really missed him as the gunner. Like, they had some missed tackles against a couple of teams that led to some big returns, but the punter is mainly responsible for getting the ball down there and putting up there for at least 4.5 seconds in the air, so the gunners are in position to make a tackle there. That's also just been the fact that only 10 of his 31 punts this year have landed inside the 20. That's amongst, again, the league's lowest in terms of percentage, and that's going to be a huge key in this game where it's probably going to be some bad weather, some cold weather. There might be some field position battles and making sure that Kenny Pickett and the Steelers offense has to drive a full 80 yards to get into the end zone. That's going to be crucial. So this might be a chance for Hubert to redeem himself in those specific instances where he was chosen over Chrisman. Just the accuracy and the ability to down punts and put the opposing team in bad field position instead of just booming at 60 yards.
This is an interesting point too by Emperor Starscream, and one that I think, you know, holds some weight here. The weather's going to get worse. So a lot of these statistical areas we're complaining about with Huber, there's a high probability they're going to continue to either stay at a low level or maybe even get worse, because the Bengals play outdoors. The Titans play outdoors. The Chiefs play outdoors. You know, I mean, they're playing all these teams. And then obviously you get into the postseason, Baltimore plays outdoors. Pittsburgh plays outdoors. I mean, Cleveland, they've got a lot of outdoor games potentially in really bad weather coming up here. And then, oh, by the way, if you do get into the postseason, it's just going to get colder and more harsh weather. So that's another thing where you got to go, oh man, this is, you really have to tread lightly with this decision.
Yeah, you do. And I think that's why this game specifically is so key. Like, he has experience punting in the stadium. I think he's probably punted in the stadium more than any other opposing stadium in his career. He has maybe not a not so good memory of getting his jaw broken about a decade ago. Yeah.
Yep.
So yeah, I think this is a really important game for him amongst other Bengals who didn't perform well against the Steelers back in week one. So it'll be interesting to see if he ends up getting the opportunity.
To me, this kind of says, I don't really see the harm in it unless we're talking about the, you know, just him not being fully healthy here, but Brandon Wilson coming back as the kick returner. And then the caveat again, though, is going back to the question I asked before we got into the State Your Case segment, which is there a defined defensive role? Might there be something, you know, more prominent on the defensive side of the ball for Brandon Wilson as he comes back from this injury because of the Awuzie injury and the Bengals kind of trying to do a shell game there? But for me, Chris Evans hasn't really given you much from the kick return standpoint, and that's not all his fault. I think that has to do with just how the rules changed for kickoffs in general. But Wilson, when healthy and a couple of years ago, was electric as a kick return man. So to me, this is the change where I'd say, why not? And oh, by the way, maybe if and when Evans is back fully healthy as well, maybe this then gives him a path to have more snaps on offense.
Right. I mean, he's got no snaps on offense, essentially. I was looking at statistics the other day, and like, he has not had a single carry this entire year, which seems crazy considering the expectations.
I think, what, two or three targets too, right? In the passing game. I mean, it's like been non-existent.
And as a kick returner, he's got 10 attempts. One of my favorite things this year has honestly just been whenever the camera pans to him and he's always got a smile, like he knows that the camera's on him in that situation. It doesn't seem like it seemed like it was the first 4 or 5 weeks where he just didn't get a single return. So all 10 of his attempts have been in the past 5 or 6 games or so, but he's averaging 21 yards per return, his long of 29. So there hasn't even been like a single instance of him breaking off a long one. And it does seem like in recent weeks, like he was mainly stopped before the 20 yard line. So he was honestly hurting the offense more than helping them when he was able to get a return. And maybe that has honestly urged opposing kickers to make sure that he has to return it, because there isn't a college rule where you take a fair catch regardless of where you are on the field and get at the 25. No, if he has to return it outside of the end zone, then that's what it is. Like, that's where the ball is going to go. So he hasn't provided that spark as a kickoff returner, and this is exactly the conversation that we were having with Brandon Wilson when he first got to the Bengals. They had Alex Erickson at the time, who wasn't really doing much after a solid rookie season, and Wilson provided that spark in a handful of games, and he eventually won the job. So this might be a return of that exact scenario, where then Chris Evans becomes mainly just a forgotten offensive player as a third-string running back.
And then hear me out on this one, because if Wilson comes back and is near or hopefully even at the form he was at when he was, you know, a Pro Bowl type of kickoff return man in recent memory, that negates some of the field position issues potentially that you're having with Huber. And so if you're not willing to potentially get rid of Huber as the holder, But then you get Wilson back and he becomes the guy that you hope he is and or, you know, that you saw over the past couple of seasons. That then you can kind of sit back and say, okay, we can take some of these L's in the punting game, so to speak, because we're going to get one or two returns a game from kickoffs that'll potentially help us and kind of tip that field position back in our favor.
And then it goes back to, hey, if this guy that the Bengals have now returning kicks, if he's providing those explosive plays, maybe it's not the best idea to kick to him. Then the Bengals get a guaranteed possession starting at the 25. So it all kind of works with in motion with how things are going with that.
It's hard. So, I mean, I guess as a whole, my answer would be, you know, to the question, is it a good idea to make some of these wholesale changes on special teams? I would say no, not as a whole. I would probably go the kick return route and ride things out with Huber, even though the stats are not good with Huber. And I look at this again, John, and I say, okay, let's just say the Cincinnati Bengals are fighting for a playoff spot at the end of the year and or are in the playoffs. Early rounds, bad weather, whatever. You have a very inexperienced long snapper. You have a second-year kicker, and I don't really buy into it, but people are kind of talking about a couple of the last couple of games where there's been some misses. And then you would have a second-year player, but technically a guy who has never played in a pro game before, and Drew Chrisman. That's your special teams core right there. And so when you're going up against a Tennessee, a Kansas City, a Baltimore, these types of teams, and you're facing bad weather, I don't mean to sound like the old Marvin Lewis guy where I always prefer the veterans, even though they may not be performing over some of the younger, exciting guys, or at least that you think that there's more potential there. But, man, that's just a precarious situation if you have to go in with that little experience. You have to make a big kick in one of these games, and you've got that amassed inexperience among that group. I just worry about that.
Yeah, you just don't want it to get worse at this point. Like, and that's either trusting the continuity that these guys have with each other over the course of this season, or it's just about injecting new life and seeing if that actually ends up making a difference. And I don't think there's necessarily a wrong route that they take. I think there's enough justification for either decision that they decide to go with, but at the end of the day, Kevin Huber needs to improve. Callum Midas needs to keep it up. And Evan McPherson needs to find his accuracy again. And once all those things happen, they'll be a lot better.
It'll be a lot better. Well, we talked about special teams. We don't talk a ton about special teams in this on this show. I mean, we talk some, but hey, it's kind of an issue here popping up. And we want to talk about what the possibilities are. We're going to preview the Steelers game coming up here. And oh, by the way, we're going to have a special preview episode tomorrow, Friday afternoon, right around 1 p.m. is the live time. And we are going to be joined once again by Believe in Steelers host Mark Bergen, one of our good buddies. He treats us well. Believe podcast treats us very well. And we have a good time with Mark. And every once in a while, when we get his co-host Ike Taylor on the show too, we have a good time with Ike Taylor. Great guys there. And so we're excited to kind of get a more in-depth look at the Pittsburgh Steelers. So join us for that. We have another special announcement at the end of the show too. I think I might even surprise John. I don't think I've told him about it yet. You want to stay tuned for that, but let's get started with a Steelers preview. John, you are now bringing up a new injury report, the latest as of Thursday. What do you got for us that's different?
Yeah, it just seems like the only thing that's changed is Deonta Smith didn't practice today. He's dealing with an undisclosed illness, but he is not normally active anyways, so no real changes for today's injury report. Now we're getting a live reporting, and as you can see on the screen, Jamar Chase did not practice, so he did not take that next step, at least today. We don't know if that's going to be the case tomorrow. We'll surely update you guys on CincyJungle.com if anything does change with that. But Chris Evans, Trey Flowers, they were once again limited in practice, and Lyle Collins was a full participant after he took his normal rest day on Wednesday.
Yeah, and then Dax Hill, the shoulder injury, he did not participate. It sounds like he's going to potentially be out of this one. Then again, spotlighting Brandon Wilson's return as well as kind of a, you know, a defensive back, whatever role they would hash out for him at this point. You know, getting him back would help remedy the loss of Hill, who doesn't appear to be looking like he'll suit up this week. Good news on Flowers, though, albeit limited. You know, that's a guy that's going to be helpful to have in there, especially against guys like Pat Freiermuth and whatnot. So got to have all hands on deck here going forward against the Steelers. So let's talk about, as we usually do, some keys, key players, key moments, all kinds of stuff. Obviously, the week one game ended in very, very odd fashion. You know, the Bengals lose their long snapper. Nobody can seemingly make a kick. It was kind of the Green Bay game all over again from 2021. Nobody can make a kick. Nobody wanted to win the game. Steelers ultimately won it at the very, very end, and it left a very bitter taste in a lot of folks' mouth on the Bengals side of things, because that was just a game it seemed like it was just right there to take, and they did not do that. And so now the Bengals are 0-3 in the division. Absolutely have to have this one, I would think, John. And you know, I think the Steelers feel the same way. They may or may not believe that they're in playoff contention, for whatever that is worth at this point in time. Delusions of grandeur, I guess. But I think they also want it as potentially a building block going forward in terms of getting the sweep here against the Bengals. But let's talk about key players, key matchups. What are you looking at this week?
Yeah, I think just how the Bengals continue to put a cap on the Steelers' offense is going to ultimately help them control the flow of the game. Like, the common issue with their struggles this year have been turning the ball over early on and allowing the other team to dictate the game script. And Field Yates, who was, I think, a guest with Dan Hoard on whatever Bengals preview show that they have on a weekly basis, he said something that shocked me, but it doesn't surprise me. Steelers haven't scored a touchdown of 10 yards or more this season. That's actually insane. Like, I know they haven't scored a lot, but you have to figure that at least once they would have broken off a big play, and that has not been the case. They have had to grind out every single one of their touchdowns. I don't know if they've been able to get short fields and have been able to punch it in quickly after a turnover, but like, the Steelers don't make it easy on themselves to get into the end zone, and that's why they haven't scored more than 20 points in any game in regulation this season. The highest points that they've scored this season is 23, and that was week one against the Bengals because it went to overtime. So obviously turnovers are a key in this one. The Bengals don't want to throw four interceptions again and give the Steelers good field position to get up on them early, but Kenny Pickett and that offense just haven't been able to showcase any sense of consistency against any type of defense, especially not a Bengals defense that continues to be one of the best in the league in defending the pass without their best cornerback. So it's going to be the story of the game. How can the Bengals offense, how can they slow down that pass rush? Can they continue to get their running game going at a rate where they don't have to drop Joe Burrow back 40, 50 times against TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith, who, by the way, Anthony, I think that is, just from a player-to-player standpoint, that's the one I'm watching the most. How is Jonah Williams going to respond against Alex Highsmith again? Because Highsmith definitely outplayed TJ Watt in that first game just as a pass rusher. He just
had a great game last week, too.
Yeah, he's just a really good player, and we are big fans of him on this show. We really liked him coming out of college. He's just, like, he's developed really well opposite of TJ Watt on the other side of the defensive line, and this is the big statement game for Jonah. Like, he's been under major scrutiny. By the way, it's his birthday today, so happy birthday, Jonah Williams. We're talking trash about you, but happy 25th birthday to you. He's been under a lot of scrutiny
this
year, right?
He's a pup. 25.
He is a pup. Isn't that crazy? He's barely older than Cordell Volson, but he's had 3 years more of NFL experience, and he's playing next to him. I always wonder how that – I'm getting off topic here. He's been under scrutiny this year just because of the sacks allowed. Steelers are known to finish their pressures into sacks, especially against this team. I don't think there is going to be a game – there's never going to be that game last year again where Joe Burrow doesn't get sacked. And TJ Watt not playing in that game had a lot of implications on the Steelers not being able to get home against him. But even when the offensive line plays good, even when Joe Burrow plays good, he's still going to get sacked 3 or 4 times against quality defensive lines. And the Steelers' defensive line is still one of the best that the Bengals have to play. So making sure that they don't take over the game and give the Steelers' offense easy chances to put points on the board, it's ultimately going to be the key.
It is going to be the key. And for Jonah Williams, he is a guy that I think is definitely key this week. I have to believe that this week off for him, you know, we talked about Reader coming back, Wilson coming back, all of these guys coming back. Quietly, one of the major things that needed to take place over the bye week was Jonah Williams resting his knee. Because I don't think a lot of folks really know, maybe they do at this point, but the dude dislocated his kneecap and sprained a knee ligament against the Ravens and has been playing on it, has not missed time at all. So that can't be, and we've heard Zach Taylor talk about how, you know, he's had some pain here and there. He's just kind of playing through it. You have to believe that this bye week has to be like Jonah Williams was like, oh, thank you. Just to get a little extra rest on that. I don't want to make excuses for him because there were issues before the knee injury. And we've seen that, but I'm hopeful that him resting an additional week here is something that will, you know, bear fruit for the team in the offensive line. I'm looking at the guy right next to him as a key player and a guy you pointed out here in your midseason rookie report, this dude right here. And he has shown some nice improvements. One of the things I like that you wrote here, John, about it was right here from weeks. And this is what you want to see out of a rookie offensive lineman. And from kind of the critical point, you know, you get through the first month, you take your lumps here, and you wrote here from week 6 to 10, Volson ranks first among 7 rookie starting guards in all 3 of Pro Football Focus's blocking grades, overall pass and run. That's huge. But the last time we saw him go up against the Steelers, it was not pretty because Cam Hayward was having an absolute day. And as you mentioned, Jonah Williams struggled, Cordell Volson struggled, really the entire offensive line, save for maybe Ted Karras, was really struggling. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Talk about not playing together, not playing in the summertime, all that kind of stuff. But in actuality, it's really just going up against a very good Steelers defensive line. So I'm going to be looking at Cordell Volson. What's in here, it may or may not be some fool's gold because you played the Atlanta Falcons, you played the Carolina Panthers. And so, you know, those two teams are not very strong at this point on the defensive side. You played the New Orleans Saints as well. So, I mean, a lot of NFC South teams, that's a very weak division at this point. The Bengals are 3-0 against those teams. So I wonder here, as we get back to AFC North, rough and tumble football, you know, the big bad boys on the defensive line for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Cordell Volson's a guy that I want to see hold up that stat that you put in your rookie report here. And I will pin that in the live chats for folks to go read it because it was very well done. But that's where I'm looking at as one of the key players again on the Bengals offensive line.
Yeah, and he hasn't allowed a sack since week 4 against the Dolphins, but it was those handful of really bad reps against the Steelers that, you know, his season started off on the wrong foot, and that's totally normal for a rookie going into Cameron Hayward and the Steelers defensive line. And I think you're onto something there. I think the Bengals offensive line likes the progress that they've made over the last few weeks. They've seemed to have established that, okay, if we can diversify a run game, if we can go under center, if we can be in shotgun, if we can run gap, we can run zone, we can run draws, whatever the case may be, and we can be effective, it just makes the life for the defense that much harder because the predictability factor is just gone no matter what your pre-snap formation is. So there's confidence, I think, building in their cohesiveness to be able to churn out whatever run that it is. But there is a difference, I think, for the Bengals and maybe every AFC North team to be able to dominate against fellow divisional opponents. I feel like that in itself just has a lot more weight to it, and it just means more to them. Like, their progress up to this point has been admirable, but I think for them, this is a really big statement game for them to be able to churn out an efficient game, both in pass protection and run blocking. We saw both of those last year in their second game against the Steelers when they beat them by like 40 points. And I think that really set the tone for the rest of the season to just grind out these games, even if the offensive line wasn't that good. But now the offensive line is objectively better, and I feel like a solid performance against this specific unit, against Cam Hayward, against TJ Watt, against Alex Highsmith, and everyone else that they have in that rotation, Chris Wormley, it would bode really well for them going forward.
The other matchup I'm really interested in, and this may be a little bit of low-hanging fruit, but hey, why not? I'll go for it. I'm gonna look at George Pickens and who he may be going up against in the Bengals secondary, whether that's Eli Apple, Cam Taylor-Britt, etc. obviously he now has ascended to a higher profile role because Chase Claypool shipped off in a trade to Chicago. So now that's and not only does that show maybe a little bit of disappointment and or willingness to move off of Chase Claypool, but obviously it shows a little bit of confidence in what they think they have in George Pickens, right? If they're able to make that move, obviously they got some nice picks and whatnot for Claypool, and they got what they could there. But I think also it's like they like George Pickens. They like what he brings. They like a lot of the stuff that he showed on college tape. And I'm not just talking catches. I'm talking blocking. I'm talking physicality. That's what the Steelers are all about. And before or after the whistle, of course, that's up for debate. But I think that is going to be because the numbers don't really pop off the screen, John. He has one 100-yard receiving game so far this year. I think it was against the Jets. And so that was way earlier this season when Claypool was still on the team. So now he's going to ascend into a different role. I'm really curious to see what he does and how the Bengals respond without Jadobi Awuzie out there.
Yeah, I think him versus Taylor Britt would be a really fun matchup of rookies who both like to get at it. Like Taylor Britt, he's been, unfortunately, the recipient of a handful of penalties for getting too physical just in the middle of the play. Not unnecessary roughness, but legal contact here and there.
Right.
And Pickens, I think, I mean, obviously one of the more physical receivers in the league already. He definitely lives up to all of the things that we saw about his game at Georgia and everything. So I'm interested to see what their overall plan is from a pass coverage standpoint, because Kenny Pickett at this point, he watching that Saints game, he was just so afraid to push the ball down the field at times. And even when he did push the ball down the field, it was with not a single ounce of accuracy and precision on those passes. He just doesn't seem really comfortable with really throwing the ball beyond 10 yards down the field. So that could mean that the Bengals just sit down in zone and force Pickett to pick apart some of those soft vacant points, or they just go into man and force Pickett to throw into some tight windows and force these Steelers receivers to win cleanly so Pickett has the confidence to target them down the field. So I think the Bengals have options in how to defend against a rookie quarterback who's maybe playing a little bit frightened right now. And that gives them, I guess, flexibility in how to defend some of these receivers who I think are still really good. Like Deontay Johnson, every time I see him play, he makes a catch that I can't believe. Like, he's legitimately good.
Did so in week one, right?
Exactly. And unfortunately, he just doesn't have a really good quarterback play right now. And the same thing goes for George Pickens. So I think that should give the Bengals quarterback some confidence in going up against these guys one-on-one.
Any other key matchups, key players that you are spotlighting before we talk about maybe a score prediction and do maybe a little bit of trivia and get on out of here?
So James Daniels, Mason Cole, I think have been fine as a center right guard duo for the Steelers this year, but this is the return of DJ Reader. And I would imagine that Najee Harris will be pretty involved in their overall offense because they want to test out this Bengals run defense that has taken a step back without Reader. This is Reader's first game back. They probably want to see how effective he is playing with that knee brace on. He made that insane play against the Steelers back in week one, where I don't know how his knee withheld that amount of pressure and flexibility, but this is his first game back going up against, I think, an interior duo and trio, really, that has played, I think, better than expectation, but this is still DJ Reader. And if he is, in fact, 100%, I think it's going to be hard for Najee Harris to run up the middle.
Yeah. DJ Reader, by the way, was on Bengal Jim's show, not this Tuesday, but the Tuesday prior during the bye week. So go check out that one. That was a pretty cool show there. All right. Well, what do you got for a score for us, Sean? You think the Bengals get their first win in the division here and start kind of making that final push in this back half of the season to get into the postseason?
Yeah, I think it's going to be ugly. Oh, God, man. I'm dying here. I'm dying. I'm good. I'm good. I think it's going to be ugly. Yeah, I think this is a Bengals-Steelers game played in cold weather. Neither quarterback is going to be tremendously comfortable. I think this is still Joe Burrow playing without his number one receiver against a defensive line that has had the propensity to get after him. And we're going to deal with these same conversations of an offensive line. Oh, man, they're still struggling. They're still allowing a handful of sacks per game. This is what the Steelers do when they're at full strength. And I don't think it's a knock on any specific Bengals offensive lineman if they give up a sack or two to the Highsmiths or the TJ Watts of this defensive line. I don't think either team is going to score more than 20 points. I don't think the Bengals are going to necessarily play bad. I just think the Steelers pass rush, that it has their number. And again, those games at Pittsburgh last year are so far and few between in the history, in the recent history of this rivalry. So I'm seeing something like a 17-13 game with the Bengals coming down top.
Ooh, that would be hideous. Here's the thing with it. Now, the Bengals don't have Ja'Marr Chase this week unless something drastically changes in the next 24 hours or 48 hours or something. But looking like not, it is looking like, we saw some people talk about in the updated injury report that Minka Fitzpatrick did go full today for the Steelers. So he may be back there. That's going to hurt. Here's the thing. The Bengals are going to have to adjust without Ja'Marr Chase, of course. And that's a big loss. But what they have a leg up with right now is their offensive adjustments they have made, not only with Chase being out of the lineup the past couple of weeks, but the adjustments from what they were showing in week one and what they've been able to do in a lot of their games since. They've been a little bit more effective running the football, particularly, you know, last game against the Panthers. They've done some other things, getting other receivers involved. I think this is a potentially a really good, and this is something else that Jeff Hartman of Behind the Steel Curtain noted in our conversation. Look out for Hayden Hurst this week. They think that there could be a mismatch problem between Hayden Hurst and this defense if the Bengals choose to exploit it. So they're going to need to do some things to get the ball out a little more quickly, not hang on to it. And obviously what they were doing in week one kind of was more the hang on to the ball type of thing, try and let something develop deep, and it never did. So I think they've done a nice job adjusting, or will have done a nice job adjusting the second time around. I do think the Bengals win. I don't know if it's as ugly as 17-13, but I'll go something to the effect of 24-16, something to that effect. I think the Bengals have had largely Najee Harris's number. He has been really limited in what he has done against them with or without DJ Reader. And so largely with DJ Reader, but still, I think the Bengals just still have a little bit of a talent disparity. I think they're going to play with a little bit of an edge based on what happened in week one, feeling that they got cheated out of that game. And I think they get a win.
Still, it's a rookie quarterback, and for whatever reason,
it
might be overblown in some cases, but this is still, I think, 7 of the last 8 times the Bengals have lost to a rookie quarterback in some way, shape, or form. This is probably, I don't mean to keep dogging on him, but this is probably the worst rookie quarterback that they faced in a long time. But I've seen stranger things. The Bengals have surprised me so many times this year. They are 32nd in variance when it comes to DVOA. That means they're the most inconsistent team in the league by far. Yeah. So they have had no troubles in surprising me before, but I don't know. I think they pull out a win. I'm just gonna say, I think they pull out
put a bunch of dice in a cup and roll it, and that's kind of what the Bengals have been like this year. Do we want to do trivia? We're running up against it here. Do we want to do it, or we out of time here?
Is the book open?
I can get it open quickly. Do you want to go, John?
I'll go. It's been a while for me.
Okay.
You pick the category here.
It will be catching the ball.
Okay.
So this will be about Bengals receivers. Which of these receivers never had 200 receiving yards in a game for the Bengals, John Sheeran? A, Chris Collinsworth. B, Eddie Brown. C, Terrell Owens. D, TJ Hushmanzada. Which of these receivers never had 200 receiving yards in a game for the Bengals? Collinsworth, Brown, Owens, or Hoosh?
I'm going to go Collinsworth.
Let me find the answer here. Again, the answer, which of these receivers never had 200 receiving yards in a game? You said Collinsworth. The answer to that question is actually TJ Hushmanzada.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it 200 yards in a game or 100 yards?
200 receiving yards in a game.
Okay. Okay. That's what I thought.
In a single game. Yeah. Let's see here. We'll give one to the kiddos here, the live chats, and we'll see if we can get them something nice. Let's see. I'm trying. We're gonna go same category. I love Dead Air. Let's.
Logged receiver history here.
All right, three. Let's see. True or false to the folks? So we're gonna make this real quick. True or false? Whoever gets the right answer, and then you can hit us up with your address. We'll try and send. And yes, we have stuff en route to people. We're just collecting more stuff to get some fun things out to people. All right. No Bengals receiver. This is for the live chat listeners. No Bengals receiver has had more than 6 100-yard games in a season. True or false? Now, keep in mind, this was pre Jamar Chase. I think is when this was written. This was pre 2021, I believe. So none of that includes those players. But again, no Bengals receiver has had more than 6 100-yard games in a season. True or false?
So it's either Crypt Keeper or Daniel Upchurch. You got it right. Whether it be true or false. If it was false.
Okay, who? Oh, let's see. I'm seeing Crypt Keeper first, but I don't.
Well, he's the only one I saw with true, so.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Crypt Keeper wins.
Yeah. So there you go. Crypt Keeper, give us, get us your address. Shoot us an email, theobinsider@gmail.com, or hit us up on Twitter, and we'll get that to you. Let's drop the mic and get out of here, John. Excited for what we're going to be doing to kind of switch some things up in the near future. But what do you got for us as we get on out of here?
I think I just need to clear my throat. I almost died like 10 minutes ago. So I need to drink some more water here. I'm going to stop talking before I embarrass myself.
I will say that we have a little bit of an announcement. It's not official yet or anything like that, but we are in works of getting a special guest. And that special guest, if we get it locked in, it would be in a couple of weeks, probably the beginning of December. Special guest would be Mike Golic, formerly of ESPN and a lot of different outlets. We're working on working with his representation to get him on the show for a little bit. He's doing some stuff with Coach Mike Ditka's charity. And so we're going to hear about that and talk a little football with him. So that would be a lot of fun talking with it. What's kind of cool. And sometimes I step back and I go, man, some of the people we've talked to, and it's not like, you know, boasting about it. It's just, sometimes I just, it's like, oh, Trey Wingo. We used to watch him all the time for years and years and years. Lee Steinberg, you know, some of these big names in the football industry. And I'm like, dude, we get to, you know, yuck it up with these guys. It's pretty cool. So I hope that it's not definitive, but we're working on getting that going. I've been conversing with his representation and looking like it would be beginning of December for that.
Big Golic, man. He's had quite the glow ups in his post ESPN days. Like, he's doing stuff with Metal Arc Media, with Dan Lebatard and Jessica Smetana. He looks great for being 59 too. I'm excited to get him on.
Yeah, he's really slimmed out. I saw him a little bit at the draft. Yeah, he looks good. So hopefully we'll get that worked out, and definitely we'll get everybody the details, and that'll be a lot of fun to you know, yuck it up with him. So we'll get that going. But kind of excited because we had some further conversation about that earlier today, and excited about that. But John, enjoy your Sunday. If you want to join me for the post game show, you are always welcome, my friend. No pressure, of course. I'm just putting it out there on live TV, so you do feel pressured secretly, but no.
Of course.
No, but thanks for everything, and enjoy the game, my friend, and we'll talk soon.
Talk to you guys soon.
All right.